the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, tech entrepreneurs are all over the news these days, especially in the US. But our first guest is a very different type of tech entrepreneur. Adam Dalton sold his first company, Robotify, for millions in his early 20s. The business was all about using virtual robots to help teach kids coding in the classroom. It was used in schools all over the States. He's now on his second company, Jamango, that's hoping to change the face of gaming. Adam Dalton, you're very welcome to the program. Adam, you're still very young, but when you were a little kid, I know you loved Lego, but were you also obsessed with computers?
Originally wasn't big into, say, computers per se, but there was a teacher in our school called Michael O'Neill. He was a guidance counsellor, and he used to do these coding classes. He started doing these coding classes after school. I was in second year, so that would have made me about 13, and we went to St. Paul's and Raheny, and out of a school of 600 lads, I think three people showed up to the coding class every week.
And you were one of the three?
I was one of them, yeah.
And he was just doing that off his own bat. It was just something he wanted to do.
Yeah, just out of the goodness of his own heart. Every now and then you'll come across a teacher that just, like, you know, most teachers will do it for the love of it. And Michael was one of those just gems. Many kind of formative years in that school computer room, learning about computers, learning how to make websites, you know, learning coding and building my own businesses.
And when you say building your own businesses, was that something that struck you very early on, to have an idea for your own business?
I can't say it did. I suppose from a young age, obviously after moving on from, say, the Lego days, I came across this game called Minecraft, which I'm sure many parents...
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most foundational games of the 21st century. And for me, it was like finding a digital version of Lego. You know, you could build with unlimited blocks and create these amazing things. And then I think it was fourth year school. So I think, 15 or something like that, or 16... we had a thing called the Junior Entrepreneur Program, which was an initiative for transition year students to get them to start their own mini business. And I remember so you had to pitch in front of the class and everyone standing up. And as you can imagine, I went to school in North Dublin, so at all lads school, so it was rough and tumble at times. And you had to stand up and pitch, and I was really nervous, kind of shy at the time.
You reckon you're going to be eaten alive?
Eaten alive, which I absolutely was. You know, so the classmates are saying, look, we'll do a tuck shop or whatever. And everyone's saying, I don't really want to do this. And I stood up and said, well, you know, we're going to do a coding class, except I'm going to charge for it. That's my business idea.
Is a great idea.
Which was a good idea, yeah.
How did it go down?
Yeah, well, it didn't go down too well in the class. It kind of, all kinds of names were called, just because, like, what's this lad talking about coding, you know? and actually, we ended up doing that business, in mini business, you know. I think we made something like €6,000 running after school coding classes. And there was a school musical on at the time, with the girls' school down the road. Whether it was too awkward or too shy, but every Thursday we used to run the coding class, and yeah, decided to skip the musical and start my own business. And that gave me kind of the thrill of it. Like, from there, I was just fell in love with it, fell in love with the idea of teaching kids.
From that pitching experience in the class, you at another point found yourself in IBM, pitching to a load of engineers, because was it work experience you were doing there?
So obviously my family is really important to me in life, and particularly my dad and his career. So my dad worked for IBM, and at the time where I was trying to figure out similar time period in transition year what I wanted to do, I managed to get like a 2-week internship in IBM. One of the guys was good enough to take me onto his team. Like, I was obviously in school, so I did my TY experience in Ballycoolan for IBM. A guy called Tim O'Flynn, the director of engineering out in IBM. Big team of engineers, and I was like blown away, because I thought I might want to be a computer scientist. And he put together a brilliant program for me, which was just, it was so smart. But basically, instead of saying learn about this thing in IBM or whatever, he said, your job for the week is to make a mod for Minecraft, but you're to use all of the really intelligent, top-class engineers around you to help you with this thing. And at the end of the week, on Friday, you're going to present what you've built to a couple of the managers in the engineering division.
Pretty intimidating.
Pretty intimidating. And I remember, I kind of look back fondly at it, because I remember it, probably these engineers are working on really important issues and I'm probably bothering them. It's like, can you help me with this thing? Can you help me with that? But anyway, at the end of the week, we did it. I spent my time, figured out how to build it, really enjoyed it because it's a game I loved. And then I'm actually coding this game. Wow, this is really, really powerful. But it was really hard. Like, it was actually really difficult because the game is written in a language called Java, which isn't too accessible. And it's not built to be modified. So you have to work around the edges and you needed like professional advice. Did this little thing. And then the presentation on Friday, found out a couple things that week. I absolutely love selling. I love presenting. I love building stuff. And I don't want to be an engineer. I don't want to be a computer scientist.
Well, that was a very valuable thing to learn about yourself.
100%.
Were you nervous?
Yeah. I think I probably was nervous going in, but absolutely loved it and just relished the opportunity to do it. All of a sudden, I was in flow and I was showing people, oh, look, you can do this, you can do that. And it's actually funny having that realization. My dad told me a story only a couple of years ago. This was long after it had gone, but this engineering manager, Tim O'Flynn, leaned into my dad in the room apparently and said, "That's your pension right there." I was like, "Oh, thank God my dad didn't tell me that before." All that stuff had happened, but I just thought that was a funny anecdote. Obviously, I had some kind of enthusiasm or passion that was recognisable by.
And no,
like
no pressure there.
No pressure. No pressure.
Robotify came along as the business idea. Just tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So through my experience learning how to code and programming, what I realized is that it's really difficult for the most part. That kind of matrix, black screen, green text, that kind of complicated something only for the nerds, I suppose, was kind of the opinion.
Well, I've seen it and I've looked at it for about a half a second and said, that's not for me.
Yeah, and it's understandable because it's not too approachable. And I think at the time, and certainly even today, like a lot of these platforms are very inaccessible from a usability perspective. And I realised that very early when there was only three kids, you know, out of the 600, I was thinking, what's going on here? You know, people dropping off and people not enjoying it. So what I realized was I saw a very basic opportunity, which was, what if we could make code learning more fun and accessible for kids? And how could that make the topic more understandable for people? And there was this stat I used to read when we were trying to get money off people, which was by 2034, 47% of all jobs will be automated or replaced by robots. And I think we never realized that we never maybe thought too deeply about it in the sense of that it could be true. But when you factor in AI, it was. And so my view was, we need to make this more approachable. We need to make this more fun. And that's where the idea of Robotify came from, ultimately to make code learning much more fun, wonderful and accessible for kids.
You ended up in the United States and you ended up meeting Steve Wozniak, who's a massive figure in the whole tech world.
Yeah, that was a bit of a dream come true, obviously, for someone who's, I love Apple products and grew up, you know, watching documentaries around the Woz. How that came about, so yeah, basically with Robotify, took that on a journey. So it was, you started the company in school, and what we originally did was, in order to make the code learning much more fun, we brought these robots in that we'd shipped in from China and basically built this educational content around it. And what we found at Robotify was that when you brought a physical device into the room and you did your coding on a computer, wow, oh my God, you know, there's a click because it's so physical. You can see these advanced concepts come to life. And over time, you know, we realized hardware was a bad business. So we need to scale. We need to think of another model. And really, really went through many, many iterations, went to college and all that stuff. And eventually found our way with virtual robotics. So basically schools and students could control these 3D robots in immersive worlds, like the Mars rover, for example.
So they're looking at the screen. They're trying to learn a bit about coding and how to do things. And if they do something successfully, they'll see the robot.
They'll see the results in this 3D environment. So we took an extension on what we had originally started. Yeah, it was really smart, and we built a lot of really innovative kind of browser technology and deep tech to make it work. And I think one of the things that was really, you know, amazing about it was to see that we could now build a business that could scale, because around the time that we started really kind of having success with the product, COVID hit. And obviously, what was happening primarily in the States was our market, because that's where it's developed. But we built this virtual robotic solution and schools were shutting down. The schools had spent thousands of dollars on physical robots. And the issue with the physical robots was not that they're not great. They are fantastic. But they're not affordable and they're not scalable in the sense that schools could only afford 30 units to share among 500 kids. And then during COVID, obviously, they weren't accessible. They were locked up in classrooms. And all of a sudden, we had a solution where people could access their very own fleet of robots with educational content 24/7 without being in the classroom. Yeah.
What was it like as a very young man who had this idea? You're in the States and you're meeting Steve Wozniak, you know, an absolute legend, one of the early people in Apple. Was it a big buzz for you?
Yeah, you know something, Richard, it's it's funny. I probably in those moments never appreciate the meaning of it, because you're just doing your job. You're trying to drum up business. You're trying to push your product and drive your mission forward. So for me, I didn't almost think about it until we were actually on the interview and I was talking to him and his face was up on a big screen and I was kind of saying, crazy that I'm actually talking to the Woz. But what was really cool about it was more so that what I cared more about was the fact that we had won them as a customer. And basically what they did was they provided kits to their schools and sold kits, and then they didn't have software. And so, well, we needed money. We were a fledgling startup and needed to think about innovative ways to drive our revenue for Robotify, and decided, let's partner with Wozniak. We'll put their logo on our software and develop a custom version for them. And we'll do a licensing deal where they can now provide access to their customers to all their robots, you know, 24/7 and learning content through COVID. And that was what I was more excited about, but also pretty cool to be able to say that I met Steve.
And you progressed the company to a point and then you sold the business and it was very successful. I don't know how, I mean, there was speculation that it was sold for close to $20 million or something like that. I presume that wouldn't all have been yours, but you would have financially done well out of it.
Yeah. At the time we were really starting to build some momentum, but still the biggest challenge for us was distribution. We were based in Ireland and we were trying to sell into the US, and so we needed boots on the ground or we needed distribution. And
you had set it up with a friend of yours as well.
Yeah, good friend of mine from school, Evan. We met each other on the first day of school. So I was the CEO and Evan was the CTO. And that was, as you can imagine, a lot of fun, and growing up together and learning together was an amazing experience. So at the time I was biz dev and Evan was building the product, and I remember having the initial conversation with the eventual buyers, a company called Imagine Learning. And I said to them, I was kind of pitching them because I had no concept of selling the business, but I saw that they had all these digital solutions and they're one of the biggest curriculum providers in the US. So they have 8 million students across their platforms. They're a behemoth of a company in the United States education market. And I said to them, lads, you have no coding product. Like, why? This is the future. You know, we need, you know, you need a coding product. So why don't we partner and distribute? And I remember the guy saying, look, we really love the product. We love the energy. We were very nascent at the time. But they said, look, we only distribute products that we own. I kind of said, oh.
So that was dropping a bit of a hint.
And then I said, oh, hang on, what does that mean? And then the rest is history. So
And what about the day you sold? Was that a massive celebration?
Oh,
did you go a bit mad? Or
So it was just one of the most amazing periods of my life so far. It was November 2021, and I remember the day I dropped. So I used to drop my brother to school in the morning. Grew up in Donegal and dropped my brother to school. Jamie, he was only young at the time. I think he's in fifth year or something like that. Dropped him to school. Like, as a normal day, and drove into the office, spent the entire day. None of the company knew, because in case the deal fell through, we didn't want to tell the company until it was all done. So none of the team knew, and I was in this little room in Dogpatch Labs, and I'd say my finger nearly fell off. I had to sign so many documents, like it was it was crazy. And I remember just from 9 to 5, it was a Friday afternoon, thinking, what is going on? And the guy who helped me sell the company, a guy called Connor Sheehan from CKS, was almost like he was unbelievable. Like when this offer came in, I said, no way, we don't need a kind of corporate finance guy. And I was like, we're not giving any margin away, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, stubborn young entrepreneur, never sold a company thinking he knows what to do. And I remember being on the phone to Connor at 4 o'clock, like, is it going to close? 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 And all of a sudden, everything just big whirlwind. 5 o'clock, I'm on a call with lawyers from outside saying, deal's done. And about 30 minutes later, I was in Mulligan's in Poolbeg Street having a pint with Connor. Then my family, my mum and dad show up, my girlfriend Niamh shows up, my brother show up, and ended up having a great night. Had to put the mum and dad in a taxi at 3 a.m. from Dublin,
and,
but
and
it was unbelievable.
Pay the bar bill.
Well, luckily Connor picked that up, but geez, it was a crazy experience, you know.
But that, for anyone, is a great experience and it's a real high. And what was it like then? Because you stayed on with the company who bought Robotify for a couple of years, which would be quite typical and normal. And was that a bit disappointing for you, that experience, when you were no longer running your own business?
Yeah, kind of two ways of looking at it. I think probably you expect, after you have a result like that, obviously I was a shareholder in Robotify. Did well out of it, but, like, you know, the real, you think, okay, this is great, I'm made up and, you know, happy days. But actually, you then post deal, you go through a bit of a period of, I would say, maybe what you could describe as depression. Physically depressed, I suppose, you know, like all the thrill of the chase and the moving towards the summit, and all of a sudden, oh, you know, the Monday comes around and what's next, you know. What now? And so there was a natural period of, you know, I would say depression, in the sense of, you know, that happening. And then the other way of looking at it was definitely a different experience working for another business for 2 years. But I got some advice from people around me, which is basically pack your parachute with learnings as much as you can, and using it as an opportunity to upskill and learn. And it was a real opportunity, because for all of a sudden, you know, I'm working, had a team of 10 people that most of them were friends and, you know, from school. And all of a sudden now I'm having to train a sales team of 200 people, travel across the States, meet customers, learn
it's
about...
a very different experience.
So different. Company with, you know, thousands of employees.
But also, if what age were you at this stage, Adam?
So I was 23 at that stage when I sold the company. I'm 26 now.
And when you say there's a party who's kind of going, well, what next? Was there a pressure that you needed to have an answer to that question for yourself as well as for other people that say, oh, what are you going to do next, Adam? What's your next thing? Was there a pressure around that?
I don't think there was. I think most of the pressure that comes is probably from myself, you know. I'd probably be my own harshest critic and someone who would hold very high standards for myself as well, in terms of what I desire. And for me in that moment, what was most important was to, first of all, you focus on myself. You know, after you do a couple of years in a company, you realise it's not easy. It takes its toll. And even at the young age of 23, at that stage, if you include the secondary school years, that's 5 or 6 years of ignoring your health, you know. So I kind of really focused on my own well-being in terms of health. And then from there as well, started thinking around, like, how can I use what I learn in Robotify in that 2 years to make my career better long term?
And
know?
Do you think that other people who sell businesses, entrepreneurs, experience a similar feeling like that afterwards?
Yeah, I think it's pretty commonplace. From I've spoken to some advisors and investors that had backed Robotify that have gone through exits, and I think it does happen. I think one thing though that I always decided when had always really never had the chance of doing this. Like, it's very easy to lose the run of yourself and think, oh, I sold the company, so I must be successful. I must have made it. I actually decided to take a complete opposite approach, which was to almost treat what we did at Robotify with the view of, you know, looking at what I didn't do, what I didn't do good, what I can improve, and how I can become better. And I think if I didn't do that, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't be the person I am today.
And has it changed you? Do you feel you're quite different now?
100%. You know, I look back.
In what way?
I would say it's a great question. In so many different ways. In so many different ways. But it's the compounding effect of, like, thousands of different habits that I've now installed. You know, the whole period from when I was so young with Robotify, like, I didn't know how to handle didn't know how to handle negotiations with investors. I didn't know how to handle the acquisition. You know, I didn't know, sometimes I could be maybe a bit raw in my feedback to the team, or, you know, be emotional, or, you know, get annoyed, or, you know, there'd be many different things. And even my own physical health, I was probably overweight and not focusing on, you know, sleep, not focusing on exercise, not focusing on mental well-being, just at the expense of just everything going into the business.
And you find yourself doing that more now. You focus on those things for yourself.
Yeah, you get those things right, you know. You know, training, eating well, you know, like moving.
But from the outside, Adam, someone looking in who might have known you vaguely or known a bit about the company or just read about it in the paper, this guy, he's 23 years old, he sets up Robotify, sells it in a multi-million euro deal. You must have been in a position to have a level of financial security from it. So what's the problem? You know, great.
Yeah.
Couldn't be better.
Yeah. No,
but that's not how it felt.
No, I think I always felt as though, you know, I want to do something bigger. There's a deeper calling, and I'd gotten a chance to get involved in a couple of different things over my time post Robotify, and one of them was what I'm now a co-founder of, which is Jumango, which is essentially a platform for kids to create games. And we want to make it as easy, the easiest way ever to make games. So we've built a browser native game creation platform, very much back to my roots and understanding how to make code learning accessible. But the cool thing about Jumango is the entire thing is on a browser. And so you can literally share a link and jump in with your friends in multiplayer in seconds.
So does that mean it's free? How would you make money?
Yeah, so it's a free product. And I suppose the business model of Jumango will rely on building a platform with fun games in it that we're going to empower the game creator to monetize their games. So we'll have some kind of virtual currency, you know, a Mango token or something like that. And we'll allow creators to build games that monetize. And we'll also sell digital assets like characters and skins and texture packs and all these
and
things.
That's how you can do it. And how far down the road are you with Jumango?
Yeah, so I would say in the overall grand scheme of things, we're still really early on the journey. We do actually have the game out there in public, and about 1,000 creators that we've cherry-picked are in playing the game, giving us feedback. We're looking at launch, going from our closed alpha experience into more of an open alpha, which means that I can go onto Jumango.io and log in at some point in the next 3 or 4 months.
So, and have you brought in outside investors?
Yeah, so we've actually been, we've really great angel investors. So we've raised 2.5 million. And we've got some great institutions, some great angels, some people that backed Robotify before. Elkstone and Delta led our pre-seed round last year. And and we've got some really great angels on board as well, kind of gaming angels. And people from like Roblox creators to game creators, like we've got some really cool people involved.
So for you at this stage, second time round,
how
is it different? How are you different?
I think I forgot how hard it was. It's so full on, but I absolutely love it.
Do you find you're in a slightly different situation to a lot of your peers as a 26-year-old? I presume when you sold the company, were you able to buy your own house? Or?
It's definitely noticed a lot of my mates, a lot of people I went to school with would be off, have emigrated over to Australia, or, you know, struggling to get a house. I'm in a unique position where I've been very fortunate and blessed to, you know, be able to experience certain things that people my age can't. And there's some amount of sadness that comes with that, in the sense of, you know, it doesn't feel fair in some ways, but I'd still very much stay close to my pals and everyone around me, even though I am different in the sense of, you know, my experience that I've gone through, still very much the same Adam, and actually probably become more authentic since selling a Robotify, because you have to realise certain things about yourself, and otherwise you'll lose the run of yourself. So,
and when you look at those peers of yours who are in Australia or whatever, do you think they'll come back?
I think a lot of people are coming back, and they're going over there, they're looking for a lifestyle that is amazing. You know, I visited Australia last year. I got the opportunity to go over there, and it's a beautiful country, beautiful weather, I can afford to live, I can have my freedom, paid well. It's an incredible opportunity, right? But everyone still loves Ireland for some reason. I love Ireland. We all love Ireland so much, even though there's so much wrong with the place.
Even on a wet Tuesday in November.
Exactly, right? But, you know, unless you were fortunate enough to get a job over there that has career progression baked into it, you know, they're coming back and they're kind of 3 years behind, and then they're only saving fresh for a mortgage when they come back at the age of 27, 28. And that's those who are lucky enough probably to be in a relationship, which is really probably the only way that you can get a house at this stage. So it's an interesting dynamic that's happening. But I do think people will come back because ultimately they love the country. But who knows, that might change, you know.
When you reflect back on what you did with Robotify, do you think the fact that you were so young and inexperienced around so many aspects of it, did that actually help?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just blatant ignorance in so many different scenarios where you almost should have the conventional wisdom to give up at certain times to say, oh, this is a damn squib or, you know, whatever. But there's just something inside the young mind, and maybe just me, I don't know, but just so ambitious to the point of ignorance at times where you just think you can take on the world. And that's a beautiful thing at the same time. I think also being so young, you're so close to the target market. You know the pain of the kid. I know the pain of creating games.
You know their pain.
Exactly.
Well, Adam Dalton, formerly of Robotify and currently Jamango, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks, Richard. It's been great.